702
on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
6 minutes past 6 o'clock. Ray in for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, winner of the Global Finance World's Best Digital Banking Awards for Best Trade Finance, also Best Online Portal Services in Africa for 2020. That's Africanacity. It's APSA. They are registered FSP. Well, coming up on your program in the next 2 hours, finding out more about a development in the Joburg CBD called Jewel City. In fact, I took a trip out there into the Joburg CBD. It's very interesting because as you go through Joburg, there are areas which are great and there are areas that are not so great. So talking about Jewel City tonight. Later on, looking at the shoe business called Matsidiso, South Africa, and then the Brutal Biz Quiz there afterwards. I hope you've been paying attention this week. I've also got your market news as well. And of course, in the second hour, the best bits of The Money Show. I'd like to hear from you. Give me a call, 011-883-0702. Or 021-446-0567. SMS on 31702 or 31567.
702
for the curious
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
It's been the big story of today in Eyewitness News, also in our business news as well. I sort of call it the tale of two airlines. On the one hand, you've got SAA. The government has told administrators of SAA that there is a clear cabinet commitment to provide the state airline with 10.5 billion rand. We've heard this time and time again. Is it finally going to happen? Is there going to be a new airline? Well, it's told an SAA creditors meeting that the government's communication has the support of National Treasury, but the timelines and mechanisms for the funding are yet to be finalised. Unions have warned, either you show us the money this week or we are going to protest. So that's them on the one hand. On the other hand, ComAir today coming out with the news that they've got a whole new restructuring plan, something else that they're going to come out with. They've once again announced that they have their plan. They're getting it right. They say a preferred investment consortium will invest fresh equity of 500 million rand in return for a 99% shareholding in the airline. During the next 2 months, 100 million rand of equity will be paid in two equal tranches as secured post-commencement finance. Additional funding also available as well of 1.4 billion rand. That's required, but they say they'll actually take on 600 million rand in new debt. So it sort of balances that out. They'll also delist from the JSC. They also want to have a new board. So there's a solid plan for ComAir. On the other hand, SAA, so many different question marks at the moment. On the line is the managing editor at SA Flyer magazine, Guy Leach. Hi, Guy, good evening and welcome to The Money Show.
Hi, Ray. Nice to be with you again.
Great to have you on. Okay, 10.5 billion rand, that's what SAA needs. How confident are you that this time next week we'll be chatting and they would have paid over that money?
Well, I'm more confident than I was yesterday because 3 weeks ago when the first deadline came up and the government promised SAA that, or rather promised the business rescue practitioners that they would fund the thing, they then started backtracking. And in the end, Tito Mboweni says, no, we only ever promised that we would mobilize the money, not that we would ever actually commit to it or deliver it. Now they've been forced into a corner. They've had to play their hand under pressure from both Labour and actually from the creditors. And they've obviously haven't managed to succeed, or haven't succeeded in mobilizing funding from the bank. So they're effectively having to dip into their own pockets to find the 10 billion rand. So they've changed the language from "we will mobilize" to that "we have committed to provide the 10.5 billion rand. So it does give everyone at SAA at least a reasonably greater amount of comfort that they are committed to saving the airline one way or another.
Right, so liquidation is firmly off the table. That was confirmed once again today. What should this new airline look like then?
Yeah, and that is a 14 billion rand question. Let me just also point out that 10 billion rand is not enough. The original plan called for 14.5 billion because there need to be 4 billion rands worth of staff expenses in there, severance packages, VSPs, all that sort of stuff, and restructuring costs were another 4 billion rand. So it's still not really enough, the 10.5 billion. What will the new airline look like? Well, to be honest with you, we've got only the flimsiest of notions because the business plan wasn't written as a business plan to run an airline. It was written as a business plan to try and assure the creditors what sort of sense in the rand they may get out. And they've had to accept this tremendously harsh haircut of just 7 cents in the rand for the concurrent creditors. The business plan itself I have grave problems with, simply because it lacks key detail, and many of the suppositions are either wildly conjectures or are just plainly unreasonable. Obviously, the wild conjecture is because we don't really know what the recovery from the COVID pandemic is going to look like. We've seen very worrying signs already that we may see a second wave coming through, what with news from France today that they've had the biggest single rate of infections in a day ever. So what was hoped to be a V-shaped recovery and then would be a U-shaped recovery is now looking like a W-shaped recovery with a bit of a blip and then back down to the bottom again. We don't know how long it'll take. It'll take at least 3 years. And even at the end of that 3 years, we get into the realms of ridiculousness because the business rescue plan claims that the airline could make a profit with a 61% load factor. Now, no competitive airline can make profits with any load factors of less than 75 or 80%.
That's very concerning. It certainly is. All right, let's look at Comair now. They've announced their plan. They seem to be getting it right. A preferred investment consortium will invest fresh equity of 500 million rand in return for a 99% shareholding. They seem to be all systems go.
Indeed, and this is the interesting difference between a privately owned airline and a state-owned airline. And at the end of the day, the state-owned airlines in Africa or around the world have had to be bailed out by their shareholder, which is the state. That those bailouts haven't been made available to privately owned airlines. So the airline was forced into business rescue. It has had to give its creditors an even worse deal at 2.6 cents in the rand, but at least it has managed to redesign itself, reinvent itself, hand itself back or get taken over by some of its original founders, the founder families in many senses, with great institutional knowledge and experience in running this airline and running it extremely tightly. It was obviously enough to convince the lenders, the commercial lenders, that the airline was worth investing in. So, yeah, they've said, go ahead, delist it, and we'll give you another 1.4 billion rand to keep it going. And the great news then is that the job losses have been reduced, or the job total staff complement has been reduced from 2,200 to 1,800. So the airline, when it starts flying again next month, or sorry, in December, you know, should be pretty much intact.
I think you actually just hit the nail on the head there. It comes down to experience. You spoke about a family business, fair enough, but experience, knowing what you are doing, and maybe that's what SAA needs.
Well, yes, but that's obviously a whole different kettle of fish when one's talking about experience and the best people, the best qualified people in the job. It's long been a contention of both Labour and particularly the pilots that the people who are appointed to management are not fit for purpose, and particularly to the board. We've seen some truly appalling appointees. Many of them, unfortunately, have succumbed to the temptation of corrupting procurement, and no airline can survive under any of that burden. Another problem with the SAA plan going forward is that government's determination to keep the airline is still largely based on its belief that the airline fulfills a development function. Some of that development function may be justified in terms of building routes that may not be initially profitable, but other functions are much harder to justify, particularly a transformation function. It's almost impossible to burden an airline in a very competitive market, which is what we do have in South Africa, with a development function or a transformation function and expect it to be successful.
Yeah, indeed. Guy Leach, a managing editor at SA Flyer magazine, great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
I think the big thing comes down to the fact that if you want to make money, then make money. But if you don't and it doesn't work out, you're going to see the SAAs. You're going to see investments saying or investors saying, I don't want to be there. I don't want to invest in your airline because I don't believe in you. Well, that actually connects to our next story. There have been a number of efforts to transform the city of Joburg, the Joburg CBD. And over the past, I don't know, I suppose 2 decades, you've seen big business withdraw from the Joburg CBD. They've gone to Sandton, they've gone up to Swanee as well, to Midrand, not wanting to be in the CBD because, let's face it, it's just people haven't felt safe being there. Well, there have been a number of efforts to now transform the Joburg CBD into a viable and vibrant city. We have seen Newtown, we've seen Maboneng, and now there is Jewel City as well. On the line is the CEO at Diversity, that's Coral Kleinans. Hi, Coral, good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. So Jewel City, is this an extension of Maboneng? Just maybe sort of take us through Jewel City.
Absolutely. Jewel City is located on the eastern part, on the western part of Maboneng. So for any of those of your listeners who've been to Maboneng before, they'll be familiar with the main kind of Fox Street strip of Jewel City terminating in Arts on Main right at the western edge. We've acquired 2 years ago from Redefine the 6 city blocks immediately west of that end of Maboneng that has been closed to the general public for the last 3 decades. It used to be the center of the precious metals and diamond trade, hence the name Jewel City. And we've taken the gates down and essentially opened the precinct up and completely redeveloped it into a vibrant mixed-use extension of Maboneng, which is bringing a lot of the amenities into the area that have previously been lacking.
Right, apartments and retail. Take us through exactly what you have developed.
Yes, so we're very excited to announce that there are 2,700 brand new flats that are available to rent. Rentals ranging from about 3,000 rand a month to 7,000 rand a month for a nice big 2-bedroom apartment. They're all brand new, connected with, you know, fiber internet to the unit, cheaper than you and I can get in any other home in South Africa. And they're situated in a wonderfully, you know, pedestrian friendly, safe environment that, you know, is of a ilk that many South Africans, you know, do not typically have the privilege to enjoy.
Something I have noticed, though, and I've been in the Joburg CBD quite a bit lately, if you go towards the west, it seems to be cleaner, sort of a safer environment. As you go to the eastern section of Johannesburg, not so much. I don't feel safe there whatsoever. What guarantees do you have for people living there that they're going to be safe, that they won't be mugged, that they can walk around?
It's a good question. I mean, the reality is that the Joburg CBD is a very big place, right? And I guarantee you that if you and I took a trip to New York, there'd be bits of that city that we wouldn't feel safe in either. You know, and Joburg CBD is no different. Not to sugarcoat the very harsh realities of some of the areas of the CBD, but, you know, it is possible to create pockets of urban excellence, you know, as we would term it, through actively managing the spaces, working with, you know, local council, working with the JMPD, our local police department, to really, and then also through urban management in the form of, you know, additional security and cleaners on the streets. You know, one can create that safe, vibrant streetscape that, you know, we would think of when we think of Paris or London or any of the other great walking cities around the world. It is possible in South Africa, and it is possible for people who can only afford, you know, 3 or 4 grand a month in rent to enjoy a space like that. And I think that's what Jewel City really is all about, is bringing into the realm of possibility for people who, you know, earn only 10,000 rand a month, the opportunity to live in a place that is equivalent in the quality of the urban environment as perhaps Melrose Arch would be.
Mm. Looking at your security, though, if you do come home at night, if you come home from work, if you walk around on a Saturday morning, what provisions have been made to keep people safe? Because I must admit, the Bree Street taxi rank is sort of just down the road from that. I didn't feel very safe driving through that section recently, I must admit. My windows were up and I thought, I need to get out of here.
You know, you say that, but but the reality is that almost 500,000 people commute through the Bree Street taxi rank every day, and there certainly aren't 500,000 people being accosted or robbed or mugged or killed there every single day. So it is possible to navigate that space safely if you're familiar and you know what to look out for. But again, I don't mean to sugarcoat the realities of crime in South Africa. It is a real threat. And, you know, we do, as I say, work very closely with the authorities to try and create safe routes in particular. So, you know, one can't safe the entire CBD. It's a massive space. But you can create safe walking routes along main arterials where one has extra lighting at night, security, you know, on every block. And you know, in this way, slowly but surely, we're stitching together these little pockets of excellence to try and create an urban fabric that works for people, you know, people that do, you know, not necessarily have the privilege to own a vehicle and they need to walk to where they go. And that there is most of South Africa, you know, and it is, you know, what we need to be thinking about when we talk about developing spaces and cities that work for people.
Right, that's the negative. Let's look at the positive now. And this is a very positive project because you have Jewel Street, you've also had Newtown as well, and Maboneng. Is this a way of claiming back the city, making sure the city becomes what it should be?
I guess one could say that, yeah. You know, philosophically, our view of diversity is that we want to invest in spaces that spatially transform South Africa. And what we mean by that is to say, you know, for decades, you know, pre-94 and even post-94, poor South Africans and predominantly black South Africans have been spatially marginalized and pushed to the edges of our cities, far away from economic opportunity and far away from the places where they can, where their kids go to school, where they can, you know, go to sporting amenities, the gym, you know, buy their groceries and just like sit on a park bench and have a chat to your friend. And we're saying that there's no, you know, fundamental reason why it has to be that way. It's just a product of intent that it so happened that 98% of affordable housing delivery happens in the middle of nowhere. So we're saying, you know, we would like to prove that it's commercially viable and very commercially viable at that to build these spaces in more centrally located areas. So if you ask, are we taking back the city? I'm not sure from whom we would be taking it, but we certainly are trying to give access to the city to people who typically aren't afforded the opportunity to live in the city and live in great urban environments at a price point they can afford.
Mm. All right, sell Jewel City to me now. Maybe sort of describe what it's got. It's got residential, it's got retail. Does it have gyms? What else is there?
So if I can take you down to the streetscape of Jewel City, you'll be standing on a tree-lined street with over 400 brand new trees, which we've brought in. It's a green space. It feels safe. There are loads of little, you know, places where kids can play. There's a massive fountain that you can walk past. It feels a lot like Melrose Arch or, you know, perhaps even the waterfront in Cape Town. But there are 2,700 apartments you can rent there. As I said, you know, they start from renting at about 3,000 rand a month, going up to about 7,000 rand a month. There's all the retail you need. There are pharmacies, there's a primary healthcare clinic, there's sporting amenities, rooftop soccer fields, outdoor gym areas, and a high school. So just down the road, there's a primary school in Jewel City, a brand new Kuro Digiet school, and then two blocks away, there's a high school. So it really is, and it's such a cliche term, but it's useful. It is a true live, work, play environment.
Sounds fascinating. CEO at Diversity, Carl Kleinans. Thank you so much for coming onto The Money Show. I really look forward to coming and visiting Jewel City very soon.
Please do, and thank you for taking the interest in what we're doing.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Right, let's see what happened with the markets. Gary McNamara is the portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Good evening, Gary.
Good evening, Ray. Nice to be with you.
Nice to chat you once again. All right, how did the JSE finish this week? It looked very flat this afternoon, and I got all excited after COVID-19. Things looked like they were bouncing back, but it just seems to be bouncing in another direction.
Yeah, I think COVID, we are certainly through the worst from an economic point of view, but if I come to the markets, it's been the same story the whole week. It's just been a bit of a grind lower. All share closing just over 0.5% lower today. But the same story, you know, commodities being the beneficiary, they were slightly up again today, which has been a theme for most of the week. And then South Africa Incorporated still battling a little bit. The financial shares coming under pressure today as well. We had that rate non-cuts yesterday, so the rates kept on hold, which I don't think was a bad thing from a banking point of view if the shares were off about 2% today. So, yeah, pretty much a reflection of the week, a slow grind lower, and I think it's a reflection of maybe some more rational thinking going forward. I think the market had probably got a little bit hot, talking more internationally than South Africa, but it's again a weaker dollar as well that's driving the stronger commodity prices.
Gary, are we being driven at all by COVID, COVID-19 in the US, also in Europe? At the moment, they're worried about a second or third or fourth wave. Is that also affecting our markets?
Yes, I think so, Ray. We're definitely part of a global village in terms of the markets. So, you know, they are worried about a second round. I don't think South Africa's got that risk. We're going into summer. But a lot of our shares would be dual listed in the UK or otherwise. So, yes, short answer, we will be affected. And our market also takes guidance from the futures and how those markets open. And they've all been opening a little bit weaker today. And I see the futures in the States at the moment are down just over 1%. So very much so part of the global community.
What's happening with Tencent at the moment? I see their problems with WeChat and TikTok. Is Tencent or NASPAS being affected by this?
Bruce, you know, I think those type of companies were big beneficiaries of the initial government stimulus. You know, it was quite a narrow recovery that we had globally, and certainly Tencent was a big beneficiary of that. I think it's just a bit of a moderation. We've seen a little bit of weakness in Amazon. We've seen the same in Apple. So I don't think it's anything per se to do with Tencent. I just think that they'd had a very strong rally post the initial COVID lockdown in March. I think it's just a little bit of, you know, sanity prevailing in that sector where the valuations have become quite stretched in a lot of those IT stocks, and I think Tencent was no exception. But having said that, bearing in mind NASPAS via process trades still at a significant discount to the Tencent share price. So I think you've just got to look at those things in context.
Mm. At the moment, Gary, what are you looking out for? Any equities in particular that sort of caught your eye?
Yeah, there seems to be a growing, you know, theme where people are looking at alternatives to the dollar. I think there's an acceptance that, and it's been expected for a long time, and people have had it wrong, is a period of sustained dollar weakness globally. Now, the problem people are having is, what do they look at if they don't want to be in the US dollar? Equities are looking a little bit full overseas. So I think there is a view that, you know, you could look at gold as an alternative to dollars. But I think what you're also seeing, and we're seeing it in the rand this week, which was one of the beneficiaries, about 50 cents stronger, emerging markets are seeing a benefit to commodities, and they generally are recipients when the dollar's a little bit weaker from that side. So I would say the broader commodity cycle and those type of shares are looking quite attractive at this space. South Africa Incorporated, the banks are particularly cheap. You know, Investec had a trading update today. You know, I don't think you must look at too much at the numbers themselves, but if you look at through them, they're trading very cheaply relative to what they actually, I think, truly worth. So there is opportunity there, but I think at the moment people are very concerned about the outlook for the South African economy. But there's no doubt that's where the value is, but we need some sort of traction here. And we saw yesterday the MPC meeting downgraded our growth forecast. I don't think it was unexpected to 8% for the year negative. And those companies are going to battle, but I think it's in those share prices. So there's definitely value there in South Africa, but we need some sort of economic stimulation here locally and some policy direction.
A few traders, also economists as well, were sort of, when they saw that 16.4% quarter on quarter, they thought to themselves, it's bad, but not what we thought it was going to be.
And I think everybody's taking some of these numbers because they're quite big, you know, positive, negative, all over the place with a pinch of salt, because I think we're still very much dealing in uncertain times. So even the economists that are projecting out, a lot of it have got some moving parts to it. So I think we've got to really wait and see how things play out longer term, and not really get too fixated with, you know, the quarter-on-quarter numbers and that, because they are massively negative, and a lot of them are capturing really the epicenter of the tight period that we've got. And I think certainly locally we are coming out of it. I think there is a concern, as you said earlier, that there could be some secondary rounds that are starting to affect the more offshore markets.
I must admit, Gary, I did like the tone of Lesetse Kganyogo, the Reserve Bank governor. He seemed to be sort of saying, we're in control of this. Things have worked out up to now. He didn't look concerned. And also saying, of course, that I think that the whole rates lowering cycle is over now. Looks like we're going to be sticking where we are at 3.5%. But that confidence was there.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, in that context, he was also saying, you know, one of their mandates is to show how the job situation works out. And there's no doubt that there's been a massive bloodbath in that jobs market. But he's a hugely credible central banker, and he comes with a very, as you say, mature outlook on how, and he gives the market a lot of confidence the way he talks, and he's very much in control. So I think it was very much a tight call, as it was in the previous round, where they did in fact cut 25 basis points. So they do look at things in context, and I think he's in charge of what the outlook is. I wouldn't discount further interest rate cuts, though. I just think that we're going to be very low for a long period of time, maybe in this range, very similar to the international markets. I wouldn't be looking for any interest rate moves upwards, certainly for the next 12 to 18 months.
Gary McNamara, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Great to have you back on The Money Show. Just gone 6:31. And Ayanda Nyati is at the Eyewitness News Desk.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, a partner to help mitigate risks and optimize your trade finance in Africa and beyond. That's African Asity. APSA's a registered FSP.
So every week we feature a lifestyle, luxury, artisanal, craft type of business that makes aspirational, beautiful, luxurious and desirable things. So what we thought we'd do tonight is talk about the shoe industry, because that's what it all comes down to. Talking to Matsi Diso, South Africa, creator, Talking Shoes tonight. Good evening to Janae Haynes, co-owner of Matsi Diso, South Africa. Great to have you on The Money Show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be on. Thank you.
That's great to have you on. I love Talking Shoes, you see. People just don't realize that. So tell us more about your business. Now, you don't come from South Africa. Take us from the United States to where you sort of landed now.
Yeah, so it's quite a story, but I met my husband in South Korea in 2013. And yeah, we fell in love. And in the process of being there, he was telling me about his mother-in-law's dance factory and that there was a bit of need for help there with the digital space. And my background was in digital marketing. And so when we fell in love, we were deciding where do we want to live, the States or South Africa. It was a no-brainer for us because we were on this adventure together. We didn't have children and my family's doing their thing. They're good to go. And so we decided, well, let's jump in and help his mom with her factory. And so that's really how it began. And it started with working in the dance manufacturing industry first.
Right. So dance, as we say in South Africa, the dance manufacturing industry. Taking from dance to shoes was a leap.
So it is actually because my mother-in-law was making ballet shoes and she was making Latins and ballrooms. There was a line of, you know, there was tutus on one side of the factory. That was the clothing production side. And then there was the footwear side, which is all the shoes. So while there was the knowledge there, I think transitioning into the way that we had with Matsu Diso was quite a leap because we were pre-creating our bottom stock, our soles of our shoes are made by hand. And it went from that to having these components that were already pre-made, so pre-made soles. So it was a big jump the way that we did it because we were so focused on ethical and sustainable fashion.
Right. Take us through some of your products. What exactly do you offer?
Yeah, so we have our product range was always meant to reflect South Africa, not me. I was so inspired by the diversity of the cultures here and just the natural beauty and the serenity of the nature. And so our brand derives a lot from nature and the cultures here. And so we have bright, bubbly, kind of vibrant, playful, like polka-dotted shoes that are meant to reflect one culture to, some kind of classic pieces. Our heels are handcrafted, or they're hand-carved out of actual wood, and then we shape them down. And so we're trying to bring elements of nature into our products, just to showcase this kind of earthly, beautiful side of Cape Town. So there, it's a bit of everything, but most of all, it's colorful and playful and meant to be evoking an emotion, which is hopefully joy, or you feel beautiful when you wear them, but something fun, like something different that feels like a piece of art on your feet rather than just an everyday shoe.
Yeah. Sounds exciting. So how do you market yourself? And I think here's a lesson for those who want to start their own maybe textile or clothing or even shoe businesses. How did you market yourself to get to where you are now?
Yeah, so we use a lot of digital. I think having the background of digital marketing was fantastic because I always wanted to be based online, and I'd kind of been studying what people were doing internationally and how they were getting that right, making sure there's good sizing guides so that people feel comfortable ordering online and a good customer experience. So I think in the beginning, it's always difficult, but I do suggest, like, you know, of course, now in these times, you can't really do trade shows, but where can you go to spaces where there's lots of people? Because there's online, you know, trade events still happening. And I think just being visible and working as much as possible in the beginning. And then from there, you know, making sure your product's just really, really as much quality. You know, the first prototype is always going to change and it's going to get better as time goes on. But a great customer service experience, because word of mouth is so important beyond digital marketing. So we use Facebook, we use Instagram, we use YouTube, and, you know, those are kind of our main platforms to get our brand out there and run Facebook ads, Google ads, those sorts of things.
And of course, the name Matsidiso, what exactly does that mean and where does it come from?
It's a big story. And so I'm going to try and make it concise so that everyone can follow. But Matsidiso too. And it's like really based on my mother-in-law. She inspired me in a lot of ways because she allowed me to even be in the manufacturing space, which I would have never had the opportunity. And she grew up in the Free State. She had to basically her dad was one of the first farmers to build housing on his farm for Sotho families. And she grew up during apartheid and, you know, those awful times, but she also didn't feel like she learned Sotho herself, and her mom knew Sotho. Everybody knew Sotho or Swana. And, she just had friends that were Sotho too. And it was very different than like the stories you hear of in the cities and the segregation, the awfulness that, you know, was a part of that era. And, I love that story first of all, but then she was the child born after a miscarriage actually. And the Sotho caretaker named her Matsidiso as her gift to her, which means comfort after difficulty. And I really loved the name. It just gave me chills and it just made me feel like that's the name. And initially I thought it was too. Like I thought it was like a meaning. And then I realized, no, it's a name. And so along the way, I've had some amazing stories of people named Matsidiso who have explained the name to me and feel inspired when they see the name. And so it's been beautiful. It's been a really awesome, awesome journey, you know, with it.
Right. Comfort after difficulty. Talking about COVID-19, how do you market or how do you run a business during a level 5 lockdown?
Whew, it's a tough one, hey? We fully transitioned into mask making. You know, we did what a lot of people did and we saw the opportunity to pivot. We had machines in the factory from the dancewear side. And so to just get you know, cash flow going, we masked. And from there, we also gave vouchers so that people, you know, 20% off vouchers for future purchases. And it just we could to stay alive, really, and then tried to keep our clothing side team in for, you know, as much of the process and mask making as possible until our other team members could come back. And so it really did save us in so many ways. And we're really grateful we could be able to pivot like that.
Yeah. All right. What happens now for Matsidiso? What happens now with level 1 of the lockdown plans? How are you going to boost your business?
Well, firstly, we're super excited to be back at the watershed. I think there's such a community element to everything after lockdown. Like our brand has always been about community, but I feel like in general, South Africa is just really banding together and there's such a movement towards supporting local. I think on an intrinsic level, people are really understanding what it means to support local. And I think it is just continue to tell the story, but also keep building community, like with other brands, with each other, with our customers, and understand that if people can't purchase now, that's okay, but that building that relationship and making sure people feel seen and understood and, you know, and being there for people, I think is really important at level 5, as we all are trying to just find our way through, you know, the madness and get it back on our feet. But I think just getting out there, trying to find community again, networking, like all of those things are important to be visible and to not, you know, go it alone, because I think a lot of, you know, business is a lonely journey sometimes, and I think you can easily go it alone. And I think rather trying to find where everybody is and exposing your vulnerabilities and just chatting is really, really important.
How do you get people, though, to promote proudly South African? South Africans are fickle. They think, okay, it's New York City. It's got to be great. But I say Cape Town instead.
I being an outsider, which, you know, I feel like South Africa is my home now. I've been here for about 6 years, but whenever I go back to the States, I just think, oh, but it's just, I hate to say it, but I feel so bored with the fashion. Cape Town to me is vibrant and beautiful and a different perspective. It's got cultures who get, you know, they fuse so much of their own personality into their products. And I think there's just such energy here. And I think people just try not to lose that, you know. And I think that is probably South African, to showcase authentically where you're from originally and your story and your history, your background. And I think that's what makes it so beautiful for me. I mean, I derive inspiration every day from other brands. And I'm like, oh, we're not even close to where I want to be. Like, look at this brand. They're so incredible. And I just think the products here are magical. And when the tourists are here, you can see that. Because tourists love South African products, because they are just beautiful.
Right. Website address. How can people get in contact with you? How can they see your products? I love to promote local business.
Thank you so much. Our website is www.matsidiso. It's matsidiso.com. That's how you can find us, or matsidiso_SA on Instagram, or Matsidiso South Africa on Facebook. So thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Co-owner at Matsidiso South Africa, Janae Haynes. Great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you, and best of luck
for
the future.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Right, time for the Brutal Biz Quiz, and this is how it works. I'll ask you a series of questions, and if you're the last person standing, you get to win bragging rights. In fact, you can phone Bruce on Monday and say that Ray sent you, and you can give him a hard time because you've got bragging rights. All you have to do is give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. You have to be the last person standing. Let's see if you can get through the Brutal Biz Quiz. Question number one, which organization secured 139 farms from the Matabeng local municipality for debt? I'll give it to you one more time. Which organization secured 139 farms from the Matabeng local municipality for debt? Give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
Whether you're in the car, at the office, at home, or anywhere really, you can still enjoy 702. Download The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Brutal Biz Quiz, and this is how it works. I'll ask you a series of questions, and if you get all the answers right and you're the last person standing, you get bragging rights. You get to phone Bruce on Monday and give him a hard time and say Ray sent you. Right, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. First question, which organization secured 139 farms from the Matabeng local municipality for debt? That was a big story this week. Let's go to Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi, it's Ray.
Eskom.
Yes, it is indeed.
Eskom.
Nice one, Daniel. Absolutely. Now, Bruce spoke to Professor Adrian Saville, Chief Executive of Canon Asset Management, this week about how Eskom's new management is going after municipal debts with vigor. Right, Daniel, my money's on you, actually. Question number two. Which aquarium is named for its location where the Indian and the Atlantic Oceans meet? I'll give it to you again. Which aquarium is named for its location where the Indian and Atlantic Oceans meet? What's the name of this aquarium? Daniel?
Yeah, I'm
with you. Oh, no.
India.
You don't have it, hey?
I'm missing that one.
Daniel. Okay, 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Come on now. If you live in the Cape, I'm sure you've been there many times. In fact, if you go into the foyer there, they've got this whole thing where you can go into, they've got like Finding Nemo fish, and you can go into the middle of the whole aquarium thing. It's like a big glass bowl, and kids like to do that. So, 011-883-0702. Which aquarium is named for its location where the Indian and the Atlantic Oceans meet? Very, very easy. 011-883-0702. Maybe you have the answer. In fact, I think I've got you stumped. Let's see if Bronwyn has got the answer. Hi, Bronwyn.
Hi, two oceans.
Yes, you see. Very easy. Thank you, Bronwyn. Bruce spoke to Reka Musson, CEO at the Two Oceans Aquarium Education Foundation, on Tuesday about marine conservation, aquariums, and the role that business can play therein. All right, okay, Bronwyn, which local retailer was founded by Max Sonnenberg in Cape Town in 1931? Which local retailer was founded by Max Sonnenberg in Cape Town in 1931? The answer is?
Woolworths.
Yes, absolutely. That's one, quite right. Bruce spoke to the CEO, Roy Bagatini, this week as the group announced its financial results and a 45.5% drop in profits. Okay, come on. This is an easy one now, Bronwyn, just for you. Which company was started by Adrian Gore in 1992? Adrian Gore, who does he run at the moment?
Was it Discovery?
It is indeed. Nice one. Very, very nice. You are quite right. Bruce spoke to Adrian Gore earlier this week about the group's results, and he spoke about seeing opportunities in very difficult times. All right, here's a very, very, very easy one. In fact, if you get this one, Bronwyn, I'm going to give you bragging rights. Very easy. Final question. Who requested South Africans to download the COVID-19 Alert mobile app this week? He spoke on Wednesday at exactly 7 o'clock.
President Ramaphosa.
Absolutely. You are the brain of the brutal quiz this week. A nice one, Bronwyn. What are you going to do with your weekend and with your bragging rights?
Oh, I don't know yet. I'll have to think about it.
Lovely. Well, Bronwyn, whatever you do, have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you, and you too.
There we go. That's Bronwyn. See, it's very easy. It wasn't that brutal this week. There has been lots and lots of discussions since this on social media sites about the use of a government's new tracing app as well for the coronavirus. President Cyril Ramaphosa has encouraged all South Africans to get this app. And there have been some concerns about it as well. A few people saying, but what happens if they track my movements? What happens if they get into my banking details? Well, the government has said this is not going to happen. We just want to know if somebody gets COVID-19, whether they have been near you and me. It's absolutely safe, and all you have to do is go to the Apple iStore or Samsung as well. In fact, most of the big producers do have it.